Hey, and welcome to episode number 3 of the Iron Maiden podcast. I know it's been a long while since I did an episode, the last one being somewhere in February, and I think that was on Power Slave and the World Slavery Tour. Anyway, at the end of Power Slave and the World Slavery Tour, episode number 2, that is, I was a bit confused on what I actually had in store for, the third album. So I thought it out and I decided to do a piece on Maiden's ex-singers, who are Paul Di'Anno and Blaze Bayley. Now, today's episode is dedicated to Blaze Bayley and his time with Iron Maiden. Now, for all of you, a quick history about Blaze Bayley. He joined the band in 94, right after Bruce Dickinson departed in 93 to pursue a solo career, and he left the band in 99 after Bruce announced his reunion with Iron Maiden. So during his 5-year course in the band, he did 2 albums with them, which were The X Factor and Virtual 11. For this episode, I was lucky enough to get an interview with Blaze Bayley, the man himself, and I asked him a few questions that I had in my mind about his time in Iron Maiden and also about his solo career. So I'll let you guys listen on the interview. Now, the interview is a phoner, so I've tried to maintain the best possible audio quality I can. So anyway, here's the interview with Blaze Bayley, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
Hi, I'm Rowan, and I'm calling from the Iron Maiden podcast. All right, is this a good time to take your interview?
Yeah.
All right. We'll just start off with a couple of questions. Firstly, I'd like to say I'm really grateful that you're giving me some time to interview you, and it's a real honor to have you on my show. So we'll start with a few questions. Can you tell us a little about what you did before you joined Maiden?
I was in a band called Wolfsbane.
All right.
And we had a record deal with Deaf American.
All right.
We bought out 5 albums. We started with Live Fast, Die Fast, and then All Hell is Breaking Loose in Little Kathy Wilson's Place.
Yeah.
We toured with Iron Maiden as the support band for Iron Maiden in the UK. And that's when I first met the guys from Iron Maiden.
All right.
And we did 2 records with Bronze Records. And after that, then I was lucky enough to have an audition for Iron Maiden.
All right. How were you told, basically, that you got the job in Iron Maiden, and what exactly did you feel when you were told that you got the job?
Well, I had an audition. There was a lot of people. They already knew me because I supported them in the UK in my band Wolfsbane. And I had an audition where I had to learn 10 of the classic Iron Maiden songs and go down and sing them with the band. And then I had to go and sing in the studio as well. And that's it. A lot of people went for the audition, and I was very, very surprised when they chose me as the new singer. Iron Maiden was one of my favourite bands, from way back, and I always thought they're the most important heavy metal band. So when they chose me to be the singer, I was absolutely over the moon. I was really surprised. I never thought they would offer it to me because my voice is so different to Bruce Dickinson. But I think they wanted a change at that time.
All right.
And that was it. And when I joined the band, there were no songs written at all for the X Factor album. And I wrote with Yannick Gers and Steve Harris and Dave Murray.
All right.
And I co-wrote Man on the Edge and a few other songs from the X Factor album. And we did one of the toughest tours to support that album. And then we worked again together on Virtual 11.
All right.
I wrote Two Worlds Collide with Dave Murray and Future Real with Steve Harris.
All right.
And then after that and that tour, then they decided to have a reunion.
All right.
That's when I started my own band.
Oh, all right. when you joined Maiden and you know, the writing process started for the X Factor, was it a bit uncomfortable for you because you were the new member in the band? So how was the writing process exactly for the X Factor?
Well, it's pretty, you know, it's slightly different because it's a different band and different people, but very similar to what I'd done before. You know, I like to start with the lyrics, really, so I always try and have a book full of lyrical ideas that I think might work as songs, and then work with musical ideas. So I worked with Steve and Yannick with musical ideas, and that's how we put it together, basically. And the important thing was that Steve Harris said, it's not important who has the idea. What's important is that it's a great idea, and it's good enough for Maiden. So, a lot of my ideas were good enough, and that gave me a lot of confidence. And working with Steve Harris, really, what I learned and the things that he shared with me, I use that now in my own writing, and I'm really grateful for that. You know, it's a fantastic experience to work with one of the top writers in the world, and someone who's uncompromising and does things their own way and not for commercial reasons.
Well, but that's really great, and you put that really well, to be honest. Also, could you tell us, when you joined Iron Maiden and you had to leave Wolfsbane, right? So how did the guys at Wolfsbane, you know, take your departure from the band?
Well, it was a very bad split, you know, at the time. I wanted to do like a farewell concert, but Sanctuary Management said that wasn't possible.
Oh.
And, yeah, so it's a very uncomfortable, horrible time leaving Wolfsbane. You know, I had this fantastic job come up, but I wanted to help the guys financially because we were still in a bit of a hole, but Sanctuary wouldn't let me do that either. So it was a horrible time, really. It took a long time for us all to get over that. We're friends again now. We've had a couple of reunions, but that was a very difficult time.
All right. Iron Maiden, everybody knows them for their, you know, their crazy touring that, you know, goes on for days and, you know, sometimes months on end. And, you know, the World Slavery Tour, which is, I think, one of the most grueling tours in history. So when you came from a band like Wolfsbane, which, you know, was doing a few supporting shows, and you jumped right into Iron Maiden, you know, and they had this rigorous touring process. So how exactly did you adapt to it? Did you find it difficult in the beginning, or, you know, how exactly was it for you?
Well, it's the same game. It's the football analogy, I think, is the best. It's the same game, but it's at a different level. You know, I was in the minor league. I went to the Premiership, so it's a lot more intense. There's a lot more expectation. You can't afford to have a bad game, so that's what it is. You know, you're at your best much of the time as it's possible to be your absolute best, and there's a lot of pressure to do that. But you're doing what you love, so that's why you continue doing it. So. Yeah, it was the same. I made videos before, I'd done interviews before, I played lots of concerts and been on tour buses and travelled and headline concerts, but not at that level. So it was an adjustment, and it took a while to get used to, but that's what I love and that's what I always dreamed of doing, you know, and I was doing it with the greatest band in the world, so of course I loved it.
That's naturally cool. Also, you know, the Maiden fans were, you know, some of them were really keen on, you know, looking at their new single. So how do you think the reception was? How did the Maiden fans at the first few gigs, you know, receive you? How do you think the reception was in, you know, terms of a performer?
Well, generally, I had a fantastic reception from most of the Maiden fans. You know, a few people didn't like me. I don't think they ever will. But that was the same for Bruce when he joined the band. You know, a few people never liked Bruce over Paul, and they never will. So I was prepared for that, really. But generally, the reaction I got was absolutely fantastic. I think the sad thing was that Bruce Dickinson chose to leave the band at that point, and he was the favourite singer. A lot of fans wanted somebody to blame, and a lot of them blamed me in a really weird way for Bruce leaving the Iron Maiden. But there's nothing to do with me. I was just very lucky to have the opportunity to sing with the world's greatest metal band. So it was mixed reactions, but more or less everywhere I went, and the reaction was positive, and people wanted me to do well, and were really, really supportive.
All right. Also, could you tell us, if you had to pick a favorite song from X Factor, which one would it be for you?
I think it would be Man on the Edge.
Okay, that's a good choice, because that's also my favorite song. Actually, I tied with China Because, but they're both really great songs. Also, which was your favorite song that you like to perform live?
I like to do The Clansman live. I do that in my live set.
All right. When you entered the studio, to record the second album with Maiden, which was Virtual 11, did you feel more comfortable in the writing process then? Because now you're well established with the band, so, I guess it was an easier process than X Factor, I'm guessing.
Yeah, we just didn't have enough time, really. I felt that it was rushed, and we should have had more rehearsal time.
All right.
There's some great music on Virtual 11. I felt that if we'd rehearsed more as a band, then I felt that the album would have been significantly better. Perhaps not in the songs or the ideas, but just I think it would have had a more positive feeling. But I'm really pleased with all the stuff I was involved with on that. I think Future Real is a great song, and Clansman is a great song as well. I think there's some great music on it, and I've worked very closely with Dave Murray on Two Worlds Collide.
All right.
Which went down really well live. So there's some great moments on that album.
Definitely. Also, could you tell us, were there any low points, during the tour that where you felt really exhausted, or you felt like, compelled to, take a break or something like that?
I don't understand your question, sorry.
The question is, were there any points where, the touring really got to you as such, or where you felt that you needed a break from...
No, because otherwise I wouldn't be in a band.
True, okay.
My whole life was to be the singer of Iron Maiden. That was the whole life, that was my whole reason to exist, was because I loved singing. I'm
All right.
a metal singer, and I was in the top band in the world, so I never wanted to go home. I never wanted to leave the tour bus. I'd have been happy just carrying on, stopping to make a record, then going on again.
Well, that's really awesome. Virtual 11 was definitely, a really good Maiden album. But if you had to, choose between Virtual 11 or X Factor, would you say that you had a better writing or better songs on Virtual 11 than you did on X Factor?
Well, the sound of the albums was nothing to do with me. So the songwriting, then I think it's really good on both albums.
All right.
The actual songs, but the sound of the albums is nothing to do with me. I didn't contribute to that at all.
Right.
In my own band, then I'm a producer, and I'm a part of the process. So I do have a significant input into the way my albums. Sound, but I had nothing to do with the way that Iron Maiden album sounded, apart from the sound of my voice.
All right. When you were asked to leave Iron Maiden, did you sense it coming in any way? Were you aware that there was a reason?
No, it was a complete shock to me. It was a total shock. I was absolutely shocked. I was working on songs for the third album. I really thought that we'd moved ahead with Virtual 11, and I thought that. If we'd have worked closely together on the third album, we'd have had an absolutely killer album. And I had ideas ready that I wanted to work on with Dave and Steve. And when they told me that Bruce was coming back, then then I was absolutely gutted. I was destroyed. It took me about 3 years, I think maybe 4 years, to actually get myself back together properly and get over that blow. It was just horrendous. You know, it was, I don't know, I was, you know, suffered from depression afterwards. I was drinking too much. I couldn't keep anything together. I went through a divorce. I lost my house. Everything, really. It just went, everything went really badly for me. That was my dream job, and when I lost it, that was it. It took me a very, very long time to get over that and to, you know, find my identity. I wasn't a singer in a band. You know, I got my own band together, but I had no touring. The record company didn't like me. It just took years and years to get over, you know, to get to the point where I am now, where, you know, I'm really positive about the future. I've made some great albums, in my opinion. I've wrote some really good songs, and, you know, I'm proud of what I do. I've got a new manager, and I'm on tour as much as I want to be, which is most of the time. And that's a good place, but it's taken years to get to that place. I didn't much see the point in carrying on after Iron Maiden. I just did carry on because it's the only thing I could think of doing.
That's really true, and it does show that you've really moved on, because Promise and Terror, I think, is an amazing album, and, you know, you've got some really powerful songs on it. How would you say, how's your relationship with Iron Maiden now?
Well, we still talk to Steve, and we're still in touch by email. And when I get a chance to go and see them, then I go and see them. But they all live in different countries around the world, so when they're not touring, we're never together. So with my band, you know, three of us live together in the same house, and the other two guys don't live very far away. So we're nearly always together. But with those guys, you hardly ever see them together unless they're on tour.
Exactly, but it's like, lives in the U.S. also. Could you tell us a little about your solo projects that you did, right from the time you left Maiden, where your first album was Silicon Messiah, right up to Promise and Terror? Could you tell us a little about your solo career?
Well, what happened is that I had some song ideas that I was very confident in, and I thought, well, what I'll do is I'll get a band together and make a record, because I was pretty confident I could do it. And I found the right producer, I thought, with Andy Smith. And I got him in to produce the album for me. I paid for it with my own money. And then it got picked up by SPV Steamhammer. And the songs on that album, a lot of the ideas were things that I wanted to work on with Steve Harris and Dave Murray. So Born as a Stranger was an idea that I was planning to work with Steve Harris, and Ghost of the Machine I was planning to work on with Dave Murray and Yannick Gers. A lot of the ideas on there. And so I got that together, but it just didn't do any good at all, because the record company in Sanctuary Management, they bought it out the same week as Brave New World, which is probably the worst time that you can release an album if you're the ex-singer of Iron Maiden.
Exactly.
So that happened, and then the next time the record company lied to me, and the management dropped me. And then on my next album, I just hardly had any money in the band left. But all through, you know, I just kept making the best music that I could, writing the most honest songs from the heart, writing with the same ideals and standards that I wrote with when I was in Iron Maiden and working with Steve Harris. I just thought, well, you know, I live for this music, so it's all I can do. So I've just kept going and doing the best I can. And then after my Blood and Belief album, then I decided to get my own record label together, because it was out of a contract.
All right.
And my late wife helped me put my own small label together, Blaze Bailey Recordings, and I got a little distribution deal, and managed to borrow enough money to make The Man Who Would Not Die. And it got critical success, and that was the start, really. We just started touring with it, and then then my wife passed away, and it took a long time to get over that, and we managed to get a new manager and make the Promise and Terror album, and now we're on the Promise and Terror World Tour, and so far it's going okay. I suppose what's really interesting is that the people who come and see us now are people from Iron Maiden from 10 years ago who maybe saw me on X Factor and Virtual 11, and now they come and see me for the first time with my own band, and they really enjoy it, and they become fans of Blaze Bayley and Iron Maiden. So that's really great. I never expected that to happen, but that's absolutely fantastic. So now I find I'm getting some support from the Iron Maiden fans that I never had when I started my own band. And that's really, really cool, you know, that people are interested in what I'm doing and come and see me. And we do things in a very different way. We tour playing really small venues, and we try and keep the ticket price as low as we possibly can. And we have our albums with us on tour. We don't have any videos. We don't have any major bank or record contract behind us. We just do everything ourselves and try and give the fans the best quality we can and make the best albums we can, and go to every town and city that we possibly can that has a rock club or a rock pub. And if they've got the equipment and we can afford to get there, that's how we promote our music. We go and play live in the smallest venues all over Europe and the rest of the world, wherever people ask us to go. And so far, the fans seem to understand what we're doing. You know, we're doing it the old-fashioned way, the way that heavy metal started, before MTV and before all of that, and, you know, giant stadium bands. Then people just used to get in a van and take their songs and play them live, and if people liked them, they would go and see them again and buy their record. Mm. And that's what we're doing. And so far, with Promise and Terror, we've played to twice as many people as we did on the last tour. We've sold twice as many albums, and we're halfway through the tour. So I think a lot of that is because there's Iron Maiden fans who are coming to listen to us and interested in what we're doing now.
Definitely. I'm an Iron Maiden fan, and I'm definitely behind you because, you know, the work on Promise and Terror is, you know, really amazing. So the songs, Watching the Night Sky, I think it's a really amazing album. So as an Iron Maiden fan, I'm going to urge my fellow Maiden fans, you know, to go out and, you know, listen, buy your album, listen to it, you know, and support it in every way possible, because Promise and Terror is definitely, you know, one of the good albums of 2010.
Thank you very much.
Also, could you just tell us whether you still follow Iron Maiden? Are you, you know, have you listened to any albums after Virtual 11?
Yeah, I listened to all of them. So I thought Brave New World was a good album. Matter of Life and Death, I thought, was good. I enjoyed that one. So, yeah, I've listened to all of them, really. I think apart from the last one, they never sent me a copy of that one.
All right.
So, yeah, the rest of them that I've listened to, and I've enjoyed them. Well, it's Iron Maiden, isn't it?
Yeah, they're the best. All right, before ending the interview, is there anything that you'd like to say to, you know, the listeners, to your fans, to, you know, people who enjoy the two Maiden albums that you did?
I'd just like to say a huge thank you to everybody who's believed in me and kept me going, everyone who's believed in my band, and thanks to all the fans for the support and encouragement they've given me over these last years. And I really hope we get the opportunity to come and see you on the Promise and Terror World Tour.
All right. Thank you, Blaze, so much. In real honesty, it's been an honor to have you on the show, and I'm really grateful that you've given me your time. And, you know, you've been a part of Iron Maiden's history, and you've definitely, you know, done some amazing work, and also your solo albums are just fantastic. So all the best for the, you know, the latter part of the Promise and World Tour. And
okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Blaze. Thanks for being on the show.
All right. Cheers.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
I want to thank Blaze Bailey for giving us his time, you know, and coming on the show and actually, you know, answering all of those questions that I had. Thank you, Blaze, once again, for giving me your time to do the interview with you. And also, Blaze's new solo album, which is Promise and Terror, is out. And it's an amazing album. I've listened to it myself, and I think it's really brilliant. So I'm urging all my fellow Maiden fans out there, everybody who's listening, please give this album a shot. It's definitely, you know, one of the really, really good albums of 2010. So give it a shot. I'm going to play you a small piece from the album. The song's called Watching the Night Sky.
Chances I did not take, and decisions that I waited too long to make. There comes a time when you just realize when what really matters to you in this life. Always connected but so far away, the suffering and passion that we hear each day. Feeling the pain of the absence of you, each night we look up at the same sky.
That one's called Watching the Night Sky, and it's from the new album Promise and Terror. So if you like the song, please go out and buy the album. And if the album's not available in your country, you can always download it off iTunes with a registered iTunes account. Also, word from the Iron Maiden news desk, Iron Maiden are done announcing dates for 2010 of their Final Frontier World Tour. So if your country is not on the list, please be optimistic, because there are more dates to be announced in 2011. So if your country is not announced this year, there's a very good possibility it might be announced next year. So please stay optimistic. And also, I'm really looking forward to Maiden's new studio album, The Final Frontier, which is due to release late summer. I don't know when that is exactly, but I'm hoping it's soon, because I really can't wait. Anyway, that's all we have from the Iron Maiden news desk. Also, last but not least, I would like to dedicate this podcast to the late Debbie Hartland. May her soul rest in peace. Anyway, thank you guys for listening. If you have any feedback, you can always leave it on iTunes, the website, that is www.theironmaidenpodcast.mypodcast.com, or you can send me an email on theironmaidenpodcast@gmail.com. So thank you for listening. Thanks, and up the irons.
No! No, we can't let them take anymore. No, we can't let them take anymore. No, we can't let them take anymore. We're the land of the free.